Hello and welcome to another edition of the Lyricord Early and Classical Music Show. I'm here with my co-host Jeffrey Dooley. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello, Nick. Good to be back again.
Good to have you. And today we are going to continue our discussion about keyboards and keyboards throughout history and the evolution of keyboards and everything that has keys on it, except the accordion and what else?
The lira organizzata. I wonder if you and our listeners know what a lira organizzata is. You don't have a recording of one.
I remember seeing that in one of the music encyclopedias.
Yes,
I'm trying to remember what
well,
it is.
Well, it's like a hurdy-gurdy. It has a turning wheel, and you crank it, and it also has little organ pipes and strings.
Oh, right.
So it makes a bowed sound, and then it has a little keyboard that you can switch either from a little row of pipes or just the rosined wheel, or you can play them together. And Haydn wrote sonatas lira organizzata.
Wow. I'll have to get one of those in here. In the meantime, though, you may recall last episode we were talking about the virginal muselar. We were talking about early Renaissance harpsichords. And what we're going to talk about today, we're going to start with the harpsichord.
The big daddy of the keyboard instruments.
Right. And we thought we would start with a really knock-your-socks-off harpsichord and harpsichordist, John Paul, who's recorded several albums for Lyricord on Lautenwerk, also with his partner Sean Leppard. They do double Lautenwerk. Lautenwerk, of course, are the gut string harpsichords. But he's also a fine and very dramatic harpsichordist in his own right, and he recorded the complete set of the works of Jacques Dufli, the French composer who died in 1789, the day after the storming of the Bastille.
Yes.
And he was the very last of the French harpsichord school, which lasted for nearly 200 years.
And interesting about Dufli, he is one of the first composers who was a completely freelance musician. He taught in his apartment in Paris, and he taught a lot of women from the court, a lot of laws, a lot of law ladies.
Right.
And he made his living as a freelance musician, which was very unusual at the time. Like Handel. Handel never was a member of any court. He's considered one of the very first freelance composers. But Dufli played right through the beginning of the Revolution.
His music was certainly a casualty of the French Revolution, because it took a long time to be rediscovered. And in fact, harpsichords in general became sort of emblematic of the aristocracy and were burned. And
that's right.
It's too bad, because a lot of nice instruments
were
destroyed.
Many of them were destroyed. There are a few that were saved, and one of them is in North Dakota in the Shrine to Music Museum. And it was only minimally restored. There's a recording of it in the actual museum, and it does give you an idea of a historic instrument that has been just minimally restored. It was preserved somehow. The soundboard was never damaged. But this harpsichord that John is using is, well, you know more about that than I do.
It was made by the instrument builder and recording engineer and producer Enden Huben, who makes all of John's instruments, I believe, copies of historic instruments. And this is really a stunning sounding double 884 instrument completed in 2000. It's an adaptation of the often copied Antoine Vaudry instrument of 1691, which is the original is housed in the Victoria and Albert Museum in London. And it's just a beautiful, big, rich sounding. I mean, it's quite a contrast to the revival instrument, the pleo, we were playing in the last episode.
Because this sort of dashes to earth the theory that anything after the pleo, this is to the general public, think they're all sort of plinky little clinking sounds. But the antiques are completely very expressive, especially the big French instruments. And also, what I find so marvelous about this is that the builder is the recordist, is the engineer.
Yep.
And it's in a beautiful acoustic.
Yep.
So it really gives you the idea of the way music sounded, because these rooms were always resonant.
Yeah, they recorded this in Temple Beth Israel in Jackson, Mississippi, which I imagine must be a very large space because it's really reverberant.
It's great. And the harpsichord needs a room mm-hmm. for its sound.
Right.
Because the resonance is the room itself. Whereas mm-hmm. the piano, modern piano especially,
brings its own
has its own resonance. Right. So it's like a singer. We need a room.
Right.
To cover up all the little funny sounds that come out.
Well, let's listen to an example from this album, the complete keyboard works of Jacques Dufli. This particular track will be La Felix.
Very
and
good.
We'll talk in a minute. Felix. That's quite something. That almost puts me in mind of a theme from a John Ford Western or something. It's got those big, sweeping, grand
chords. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And it really shows the resonance of a harpsichord. And it's in French music is also very, mm-hmm. very unlike any other. You find very little fuguing going on and a lot of concentration on sonority. And most of the works in French Baroque music are sort of miniatures. They tend to be dismissed by many people.
Uh-huh.
But the French taste was more immediate, and they loved the harpsichord. And this particular piece is very typical of French music, where there's those sort of chopping bass notes that mm-hmm. are almost like a royal march, you could say. And you'll notice it's also quite low in pitch.
Yes.
So there's some other ones that we'll be hearing where
this is called Kernberger 3 temperament.
Kernberger 3, number 3.
And that's A equals 392.
Yes. Even lower than 415.
Yeah, right.
So it really is bringing out the, you know, the resonance of the lower part of the instrument.
Mm-hmm.
There are several tunings. There are Werkmeister, several different tunings. And this one is the lowest, probably, I think. Someone will probably correct me on that. Uh-huh. But 392 mm-hmm. is even quite a bit lower than even 415, which is a half step lower right. from modern pitch. Uh-huh. So this might be close to a whole step uh-huh. lower.
Now, many of Dufli's pieces are named after people, some we know as composers, some we don't know. A lot of women's names.
Yes,
What's that about?
Well, he dedicates pieces written in honor of these various styles. Like this one, I'm just looking on here on La Felix, was a musician who contributed several pieces to musical productions of the day.
Uh-huh.
And periodicals, he wrote about music, and he ran a theater in the Rue Saint-Honoré,
uh-huh.
I'm reading from the notes here, who hosted the Buffons and whose place the Mozarts gave concerts in 1764, uh-huh. which is interesting. So he wrote for people who were not necessarily musicians, but people who were in the theater, artists, all these pieces he composed sort of in honor. Little musical odes to them, you could call them.
Uh-huh. Well, let's listen to one called La Fourqueraie, and La Fourqueraie was another composer, French composer.
Fourqueraie was a viola da gamba virtuoso.
Mm-hmm.
The harpsichord pieces are his son's transcriptions of his father's pieces for viol,
uh-huh.
and he kept the pitch down. He played, because they're for bass viols. So when he transposed them to harpsichord, he didn't raise them up the higher pitches. So what you hear in Fourqueraie's transcriptions of his father's viol pieces are all in the lower regions of the harpsichord, mm-hmm. And showing the strength of the bass line of these big French instruments,
uh-huh.
the bass part of the instrument.
And that's reflected in Dufli's version.
Yeah, same thing. Mm-hmm. All of these pieces, he's writing in the style of these composers, but there are little changes, so uh-huh. he's sort of giving an homage to the composer, as you would uh-huh. say.
All right, well, let's listen to La Fourqueraie.
Thank you.
La Fourqueraie by Jacques Dufli, performed by Jean Paul. You could almost call that How Low Can You Go?
Yes.
Great French, broody, low-down sound. He does actually play higher registers as well on this entire collection of Jacques Dufli's works. But we thought we might actually now go over to Italy, since we're moving around with keyboards, and play something of Domenico Scarlatti, a couple of short sonatas.
He's so well known for his sonatas, they survived even through the unpleasantness of the Victorian era, because piano students learned his pieces. And I shouldn't say the unpleasantness of the Victorian era.
Well, Scarlatti sounds terrific on piano.
It works. It works. But it is true harpsichord music, and he's Spanish influence. And all of these sonatas are unique. They're sort of like Soler's sonatas, too, who wrote concertos for two keyboards and sonatas similar to Scarlatti.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's listen to Elaine Thornburg performing Scarlatti's sonata K347, Alla Breva, Moderato, and Cantabile.
Thank you.
That was actually two sonatas by Domenico Scarlatti performed by Elaine Thornburg. She sort of pieced them together very rapidly, but made a very nice segue.
This is done quite often. People will create little suites of their own. And Scarlatti sonatas, which are short, you could make a little suite of the different sonatas joined together.
That was number 347 in G, Alle Breve, Moderato, and Cantabile, and number 348, three-quarter Prestissimo. And that instrument was a copy of a Florentine original harpsichord from the 18th century, and that was made in 1988 by John Phillips of Berkeley. And Elaine Thornburg is still a very active harpsichordist and teacher in the Bay Area. And what we thought we might do is, since we've heard that instrument, she plays two different instruments on this two CD set. And the other one is a larger instrument, which will have a much different sound. But first, is there anything you wanted to say about that, Jeffrey, the little piece we just heard?
The piece is quite typical. It's almost like a Spanish dance or a fandango. And the interesting thing about Scarlatti is really known for these sonatas, but he also wrote a few operas and fantastic solo church music. But this was on the smaller of the instruments that she has, which is actually at the 415 pitch, one manual instrument, and you can hear that it's a little bit lower in pitch. And then the next one, the second instrument she uses, is pitched higher. It's at 440, which is a sort of modern tuning. But sometimes they were tuned even higher, especially in Spain. Some of them were even higher than that. In Italy, they're extremely high. Even today, the pitch is outlandish in Italy.
Really?
Yes. And there has been a movement through their parliament, whatever it is, to get the national aid down lower.
Really?
Because singers are having trouble with their voices. You know, the higher you pitch something, the more tension there is, the tension in the strings. But voices can only go so high before tension builds up. And that's why it's a dream to sing Baroque music in the original keys for countertenors. Every voice. Anyway, this one is in 440, and I can't tell here, but I think it's probably two manuals. I'm not for sure.
Right. Well, let's take a break, and then we can come back and play some more, okay?
Very good.
Critics praise this milestone recording of the complete harpsichord works of Jacques Dufy, brilliantly played by master harpsichordist John Paul, and available on Lyricord. Jacques Dufy died the day after the storming of the Bastille in 1789. The last representative of the French harpsichord school, his music, all but lost in the chaos of the French Revolution, can now be rediscovered on a stunning and specially priced collection of CDs or downloads. The Penguin Guide to Recorded Classical Music says, an enterprising and important set. Brian Robbins of Fanfare magazine agrees. The set is a real credit to all involved and an important document. Dufy's music is admirably played by John Paul, who here emerges as a performer of considerable distinction. Visit www.lyricord.com and order this thrilling collection today.
I'm back here talking with Jeffrey Dooley on the Lyricord Early and Classical Music Podcast. Well, let's give a listen to one of the sonatas from the second album of Elaine Thornburg performing Domenico Scarlatti, sort of a march through pitches. So here is Scarlatti's sonata number 553 in D minor. Thank you.
again.
Italian Baroque composer Domenico Scarlatti, performed by Elaine Thornburg, and that was Sonata 553 in D minor. That is a two-manual John Phillips instrument after an 18th century Florentine original. The earlier one we heard was also a John Phillips instrument, a one-manual. This one was built in 1993, and the other one was in 1988. And Jeffrey, what do you think are the differences that are apparent there?
Well, to me, the apparent difference is that the second one, because it's not only pitched higher, the piece itself is using a lot more of the treble part of the instrument. I would say the first one is a little bit more intimate mm-hmm. in sound. This one is more public sounding, mm-hmm. But it could be the piece, too.
Sure.
It could be the virtuosity of the writing.
The disc one is recorded in the mid-80s at Lucasfilm's Sound Studios Skywalker Ranch, a very famous recording studio that's usually used for films. Mm-hmm. But the second one was recorded in a church in Belvedere, California, St. Stephen's Episcopal Church.
It has some of that that ambience of a more open room.
Mm-hmm.
Carries the instrument.
Right. Both are very nice sounds, though.
Mm-hmm.
So. Now, what I thought we might do is switch Elaine's for a moment. We have another Elaine Comparone, the harpsichordist and the leader of the Queen's Chamber Band and Queen's Chamber Trio, and a figure who looms large on Lyricord. But we have one album of hers, a solo Scarlatti album, and where she also plays keyboard sonatas, and it's entitled The Cat's Fugue. Of course, The Cat's Fugue is one of the sonatas on here. But there's a lot of them on here, and I thought we'd play another one, sort of as a contrast to Elaine Thornburg's, because it's a very different sound and a very different approach.
Different approach. Elaine has been here for a long time, and she's a real innovator in the harpsichord in New York and the mm-hmm. whole country. And her approach is very dramatic in everything she does.
Right.
And she really brings out the sonorities of the instrument.
Yeah.
You can really feel the Iberian effect when uh-huh. she plays these pieces. They are. They're Spanish. They're like Spanish dances.
Yeah. And she plays, of course, a very different instrument, a Frank Hubbard replica of a 1646 Rucker's harpsichord, a Franco-Flemish hybrid. And it's just a very different sound, and but it's still Scarlatti, and it's still wonderful.
And also, you hear the mechanics of the instrument, which is really a part of the harpsichord.
Mm-hmm.
It's the sound
sure.
of the jacks of the instrument. You can almost hear the castanets going on
yeah,
in the background.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's listen to Sonata in F minor, K-183, and then we'll talk.
Thank you.
Scarlatti's Sonata in F minor, Kirkpatrick number 183, performed by Elaine Comparone. And a very different sound indeed from Elaine Thornburg's Scarlatti. Anything, Jeffrey?
Well, it's just that I've worked with Elaine a lot over the years, and she is a real individualist, as you can tell mm-hmm. from her playing. And I'm not sure we mentioned this on one of our other programs, but Elaine often stands play, and she has her harpsichord up on a stand. And if you look at some of the Vermeer paintings, you'll notice that the woman is standing at the instrument. And it does give a totally different sense of balance in playing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful to stand in front of a harpsichord that's up to your practically up to your elbows,
right.
And she's the only harpsichordist I've ever worked with who stands to play with her instrument, and it has a wonderful effect. And she also she's very enthusiastic, very adventurous in her performances, a real groundbreaker, I could say.
Indeed. I called her the Jerry Lee Lewis of the harpsichord,
yes.
which she appreciated. But she's doing a lot of stuff on their accord, and we'll have many more sessions involving Elaine and her recordings. We thought maybe we would now switch, since we've spent some time on the harpsichord, we would switch to its cousin, the Lautenwerk, which is the gut-strung version of the harpsichord, mm-hmm. or the lute harpsichord, it's also called. And we're fortunate enough on Lyricord to have one of the really, I think, finest performers of Lautenwerk around. Not that there are all that many, but it is. There are more and more.
More and more familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about Lautenwerk, I think there are three of them in the list of Bach's instruments,
right.
but they've never been found. They probably were lost. So no one really knows what the Lautenwerk looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And all the builders have, there is one builder who built one, I don't remember who it was, who built it in the shape of a lute.
Yes, I've seen that. Yeah.
But it is an interesting comparison, and lute works can be played on the Lautenwerk.
Uh-huh.
We know that Bach had three of them, and mm-hmm. his suites work beautifully on a Lautenwerk.
Yeah.
As a keyboard. It's different than playing it on the lute because you don't have a control of volume.
Right.
Dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
But that on, as you know, on the harpsichord, the dynamics are determined by how long you hold the note.
Right.
And it's a beautiful sound, and
it's
like nothing else. It's literally, it's gut strung,
mm-hmm.
meaning the strings are not wire, and they're not wrapped gut. And some instruments have two manuals, some have just one manual.
Right. And the strings are shorter than the metal strings of a harpsichord, right?
That's right. And they can be at angles, too.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we hearing today?
Well, John Paul has recorded two albums on Lyricord with his partner, his performing partner, Sean Leppard, and they perform on two Lautenwerks. And the first recording they did with Lyricord was the Trio Sonatas by Bach.
Which
is a wonderful recording where they both play the same left hand. So there's three discrete melodies in the Trio Sonatas, obviously, but they're both playing the same left hand bass line. So
they've divided up, because originally the Trio Sonatas are organ works.
Mm-hmm.
A pedal plays the bass line, and then the one manual is one of the parts, and then the other manual is the other part.
Right.
And so this is a transcription, and it works really well because then you have literally two performers reinforcing.
Mm-hmm.
So they pass the bass line from one to the other. Is that how they keep it going?
They're playing simultaneously the same left hand.
Yes.
Part. So.
And these pieces can also be played with two violins and a bass,
right.
two instruments mm-hmm. and a bass.
Right. All right. Well, let's listen to something from the Bach Trio Sonatas performed on Lautenwerk by Sean Leppard and John Paul, and then we'll talk more.
Okay.
Thank you.
That was Sean Leppard and John Paul in performing J.S. Bach's Trio Sonata in E minor, BWV 528, the Adagio Vivace movement. And I think that's just perfect illustration of what they're doing and also the sound of the instrument.
Yes, and the instrument, it has that presence.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell it's two people playing. It has right. That sort of random sound, which makes a wonderful effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeffrey, I think that'll about do it for this program. We are going to continue our discussion about keyboards.
Very good. I'm looking forward to the next session we do.
Okay, great. See you then.
Thank you.
This program, copyright 2009, Lyricord Discs. All rights reserved. Don't miss the next Lyricord Early in Classical Show podcast, Part 3 of the Keyboard, Hammered and Plucked. This show features more gut-strung dual Lautenwerk playing by Sean Leppard and John Paul from their recording of J.S. Bach Trio Sonatas on Lautenwerke, and discussion and examples of Richard Traeger's highly praised ongoing series, J.S. Bach on Clavichord. In-depth description of the mechanics of the clavichord's action and the instrument's place in the history of music are discussed.
The tangent comes down on the string and not only creates the pitch, but also creates the sound.
Don't miss the next Lyricord Early in Classical Show podcast.